3, 2, 1.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
Big O! Showtime!
It's about fucking time someone else is.
You were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little tech show, and that's fact. If you don't like the cats, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a Lincoln bat. For the streaming, go direct to DLNGS.org. And ICChannelInterlinux.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, go together, just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 993 of the Links Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
Happy spring.
We have Joel.
Good evening.
We have Joe.
Like half the country frozen or something.
And we have Rich.
Hey, guys.
How's it going, man?
Yeah. And I guess we got a bunch of stuff to get to, but I did want to say I made a real, like, frustrating screw up today, and
in the kitchen or in
no, it was a public screw up actually. So I was so excited because one of the things that I pulled the ticket for was to upgrade us to PHP 8.1. for our VIP application, because they're going to 8.1 and we're currently on 8.2, but that involves the whole local development stuff and CI pipeline and Circle CI. And one of the issues that I ran into attempting to use a newer version of the image in Circle CI was that the image that I was using is PHP Node image, which has PHP and Node installed on it. So their basic image is PHP. Then there's a PHP browsers, which has headless browsers on it, and like Firefox, Chrome, and everything is pre-installed. And then there's the PHP Node, which has Node. And I had to be really careful because depending on which minor version or even, you know, major version of PHP image I was using, because they have like 7.5, 7.7, 7.7, 7.9, 8, 8.1, and 8.2 images. And I found, you know, I noticed that as minor versions of PHP were released, they had gone from like the 8.0.11 version was the last version that installed Node 14. And then the 8.0.12 and above all had Node 16. And our app was currently only, or there's requirements in there that we were pinned to 14 for a long time, whether that's changed or not. So I had to be really careful with that. But I knew that when we wanted to go to 8.1, I was going to run into the problem of there is no Node 14 image with 8.1. So I had the brilliant idea that I can get around this by using NVM, which I talked about last week, and just install Node 14 and then use that to build our application in there for testing purposes. And it worked great. And everything went smoothly. But every single one of my tests failed. So I build it in the same thing locally, and all the tests pass. So I'm used to like maybe a couple of tests failing, but like every single test failed. So I was playing around with it for a while, and then what I had discovered was that Mod PHP wasn't loaded, and I dug further into it and realized that prior to back in November of 2021, they switched their process for installing PHP to a, instead of using the distribution's package manager and packages for PHP, they were just installing it manually, building it and compiling it in the Docker build file, you know, configuring it, making it, and installing it. And so I was digging through all that stuff in there. And then they included a bunch of tools in there, like Pear and Pico and Docker PHP extension installer, which allows you to get a bunch of different things in there fairly easily that may not have been built with them. And one of those things is not mod PHP for Apache, the Apache library. And I was really frustrated by this because I was like, why would you take away like a core functionality? And why is nobody, like, I looked through their issues, I looked through all sorts of stuff, and nobody seemed to have a problem with this. Like, nobody was like, hey, how do I get it working with with Apache again? How do I get, like, nobody, no issues about this, no documentation. Like, and then I'm like, I must be stupid. There's got to be a mistake here. I must be missing something really obvious. And, you know, I looked through Pear documentation, Pico, and the Docker PHP extension installer, and, like, looked through all this stuff trying to find what is it I'm missing of how to get the mod PHP working. Nothing. The only thing that's available is the Apache documentations that tell you you have to configure PHP using the APSX. Binary, the Apache software, whatever that is, I forget what it's called, and then build PHP again, and it will be good to go when you install it. So I was like, I can't believe I have to re-implement half of the Docker build file in my CircleCI configuration to get this to work, and nobody else has complained about it. And so I talked to some other people, and then I went and I posted on their issues. And then, as a lark, I posted in our VIP support channel. And then I started, like, saying, okay, what am I going to have to do if I have to build this myself? They're using Ubuntu 22.04. Which is the base image for this. And I'm like, all right, let me go back looking through all this stuff and the Docker build files going back through. So the way that the Docker build files, like, kind of chain together is, you know, you look at this one, I'm looking at the Node PHP image, which is built off of their base image, which is built off of the Ubuntu 22.04 base image. And I'm like, well, I got to figure out, you know, what is exactly installed. What is it that I need to get installed on here? That was installed before. So as I'm going back through the images and stuff, I'm like noticing something. I'm like, wait a minute.
Now, you're going back through the images. You're doing an A-B comparison on one to the other?
No. What I meant is I'm looking at the Docker files of the repos for how these images are built, these Docker containers are built. So I'm like looking at, like I said, the top one was their the PHP node, or just the PHP, actually, because the PHP node builds off of their PHP image. And then that builds off of their base image, which is another repository. And then that builds off of the Ubuntu 22.04 base image, which is another repository.
I was
just looking through the Docker files and manifests and everything to see what is exactly, you know, what is the install and what are that's already available on here, the packages and stuff. And I could not find Apache listed in anything. And I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, where did it go? How is it currently on the image that I'm running, but it's not in any of the build files, and it's not in the manifest for the root for how the Ubuntu image was built, container image was built. So then that's when I discovered Apache's on there because I'm installing it in the CircleCI configuration, and I completely missed that. So what ended up happening and how this was working from the old image was that because they were using packages maintained either in a PPA or just the version of PHP with that version of Ubuntu, I could just install Apache and libphp modphp for Apache, libmodphp, and then the rest of it just all worked and it was fine. It wasn't their image that was installing that part. It was me. And with that gone in the newer release where they're using their pre, like they pull the source down and build it themselves in the Dockerfile container, those packages for PHP weren't in there for, or weren't ready for me to use with that version of PHP or set up properly or anything like that. So that was like really frustrating. And I discovered that seemed to be the case. And while my tests were failing, because I started digging deeper and deeper, I'm like, I'm trying to set up the WordPress debug log. I'm not getting any logs, PHP logs anywhere. So I was just hitting this with curl on the, because CircleCI has the SSH that I can get into, which makes this really difficult, at first difficult to troubleshoot, is it's headless and I can only, like, I can't get to it. So the only way I can actually kind of test this is when I started up with an SSH session available to me. And then I could use like curl or wget to see the results that come through. But even then, that is problematic because it's a truly, like, really customized version of WordPress that we're only using the Gutenberg editor for. And it's single sign-on using Okta, which is not going to work when I'm making curl calls to it. But what I was seeing in the artifacts were this weird message, like this a bunch of garbled text, or not garbled, just like text all over the screen. And this message, which at first threw me, because it said, you don't have permissions to perform this action. So I'm thinking something's wrong with our plugins, that maybe they're not compatible or something's not working right with that, particularly with the single sign-on. And for some reason, it's not getting the roles that it's supposed to through Okta. But I've never seen this message before, and I can't replicate it locally. And that's when I realized, after trying to just do get the logs to work and trying to a test PHP page, which just prints out PHP info, that what I'm seeing on the screen is just that file in the WordPress directory, postnew.php. It's just showing me the contents of that file, and like a text file, instead of processing it. So that is what, like, really clued me in that PHP wasn't working, and I had to start looking at it from that direction. But what ended up happening was I felt like an ass because I had posted an issue to their GitHub page for something that totally outside of what they did.
Yeah, right. Like,
I'm like, boy, so I had to close that, and then I had to post back to the VIP support and say, yeah, I figured that out. And then I'm like, all right, so yeah, I am going to have to re-implement what it looks like. I'm going to have to re-implement the configuration and building of all this stuff. And so I set to work on doing that, and it was getting to be kind of a pain in the ass. I mean, it was adding at least 5 minutes on to the whole process of setting up this image to get it going. And I noticed that PHP 8.1 was available in that image. Like, all I had to do was just, instead of installing, you know, instead of using their manual, I could just do an apt-get install for PHP in my configuration file, to which at that point I was like, well, it's going to cause problems if I try and install Ubuntu's PHP alongside of this custom installation of PHP. So I bagged it and switched over to the just the node image with nothing but node installed. And I could choose the latest node 14 image. That worked perfectly. I did the install of PHP and what I needed for that alongside of the installation of Apache at the front. And then it was just a matter of a few extra steps of getting Composer on there. So I fixed that. It was a little bit of a segue, frustrating, and like egg on my face for not realizing that it wasn't that they removed something. It's that I added something that was no longer working with the image that they built. But it was a fun experience. I'm sick of it. It was so long since I had to actually like dig into the guts of a LAMP system. And figure out why this stuff wasn't working all together. But it was quite fun.
So do you keep like either notes, a personal log, or a formal log of your builds and how you do it and why?
Well, so this, I do try to document everything, like in when I'm doing that kind of work, document it in the configuration file. Like in this case, it's largely inside of the CircleCI configuration file. And so it's documented in there as well as in a few other places like we have in Confluence. I do keep some personal notes, but not extensive. More information will be found in the stuff that I have put into the actual inline comments and things like that, or in Confluence that we have. I do try and document it. Now, again, the only thing that I was working on in this case, like this was our stuff, was that CircleCI configuration, and I was using images pre-built by the CircleCI team, largely because they built it and it integrates pretty well with their system, and then it allows, you know, some specific things for their system, which I could take from their repository because it's all available online. You can see how all these things are built.
I'm going to ask the question. I'm assuming CircleCI is a continuous integration system.
Yes. Yeah. It's a vendor. They have, it's called Circle Continuous Integration System. It's just called CircleCI. It's a software as a service. It's a web interface. It's kind of like TeamCity or Jenkins or something like that, but it's their configuration is YAML, and you have available to you out of the box like bash scripting. And then you can, depending on the image that you choose, there might be Python in there too. So there's different ways that you go about doing it. You could use Docker containers, which they make some available for you that specifically integrate with CircleCI better. And I never tried using a non-CircleCI image yet, but one of the nice functionalities that they have in there is like in this case where I'm working on the build process of building this this workflow, builds and installs WordPress and our application in it, and then it runs the tests. So there's a lot of steps in this workflow to do all these things. One of the nice things that CircleCI has is you could rerun a workflow with SSH access, which gives you, you know, it spins it up, it runs through the entire workflow. At the start of it, it gives you the SSH command that you need to get into it. So you're in there while it's running. And then, you know, like in the case where I'm building this and something's not working right, I can then just run the commands in that SSH session to see what it is I need to fix or change, and then put that back into the XML or the YML file. But they also have what are called orbs, which are little modules that that you can inject into your configuration that, instead of using containers, has pre like defined in like little environments. Like you could have an orb for Ruby on Rails, I think, or an orb for PHP even, or different like larger blocks of software that maybe you would want to have almost like a containerized environment for. But I guess this was their system before they included containers. We tried working a bit with their orbs, but it was a lot more difficult to integrate a LAMPS environment as opposed to just using the Docker images that they have built. Now, again, one of the nice things that they do, and I'd have to look deeper into how they built their images and what they used to build them, and maybe what other scripts that they put into there that helps further integrate it into the Circle CI. But one of the nice things was I just had to say, use the PHP image and use the MySQL contain image. And when it ran, it just easily linked, because it was available, the PHP to the MySQL, and that was good to go. There wasn't a lot of extra things I needed to do to connect all that together. It just flowed because of the way they have it set up. But anyway, I hope that answered your question, Rich. So in a roundabout way, I do document the stuff that we do document the stuff that we do, and then it goes on to the whatever documentation is provided, or any further documentation needed is at that project that we may be using.
So what I do for home, I'm using Gitia, which has like a wiki, a source repository, a couple of other things, a couple other tools in it. And so all of my deployments, I'm documenting, you know, everything, how I do it, why I do it, where the files are. And one of the things that I do on a regular basis is my vCenter, because I have the trial license, it expires in 60 days. So I have a script that deploys it, and then all of the configurations, creating the different clusters and groups and adding the hosts and everything, is all scripted. So every 60 days, you know, it kind of hits me by surprise. I probably ought to put it on the calendar. And I'm like, oh, I got to redeploy vCenter. And, you know, it takes a couple of, takes, I guess, a little over an hour to deploy vCenter. But I go back to my Gitia and look at, you know, basically it's a Git repository. Look at all of my notes on how to do it. Deploy all of the other scripts that finish the config once it's up and running, and you know, basically what we call the day two operations. And you know, so it's no big deal anymore. It's not like, oh, I gotta log into all of the hosts, and you know, it's like, no, I just run some scripts and boom, it's done. So yeah, I guess my point that I was trying to make is just whatever corporate documentation requirements are, you know, I don't know if you guys have a standard on that or not, but it's really nice, you know, just for your own safety, your sake of mind or whatever, to have good documentation so you know when you go back to it. Like, I'm assuming from the way you told the story, this has been going on for years. This is something you probably did N years ago and it's just worked fine and now you had trouble with it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was... Gosh, it was summer of 2021, I think, or maybe a little before that this was implemented. This setup,
forever.
Yeah, so that was, and the impression was the impression that most people would have, like, crossing fingers is, well, it should be just as simple as switching out, like using a newer version, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And so, yeah, the thing, like, all our systems are documented for how to build and deploy, test and deploy the system. And it's all automated. But when you have to go in and then change some of that process, then you have to make sure that you update that documentation, which we do. And I do. Some, and that's the thing, like, they're never, we don't have clear-cut guidelines or requirements for documentation. So some people's documentation is kind of sparse and lacking in steps, which I'm not going to attest that, like, our team has the best documentation in the company, but by and large, we try to do our best to cover as much as we can so that if somebody were to come along and have to start from scratch or whatever, it would make sense to them and they should be able to do it. Now, some other teams, it's like an exercise in futility. I feel like, you know, here you give me these instructions, this thing that we got to now do, and I go to do it, and it doesn't work, right? And I got to troubleshoot and figure out what it is that you didn't tell me that needs to be done, or what it is that you haven't done on your end that makes it so that I can't do what you're telling me I can do, like provide me with the right permissions or whatever, you know? So that there's that.
Yeah, and I guess maybe I'm just stupid old school. Back in the DOS days, I mean, you had an exe file and a directory for the app you ran, and you ran the exe file and it worked. And, you know, there were no shared libraries or anything like that. Which I'm always fascinated when I run a Docker file, you know, spin up a container, and I'm like, it's pulling this, it's pulling that, it's pulling this, it's pulling that, and it, you know, takes forever to build and get up. Like, oh gosh, you know, what is the, I don't want to say attack vector for errors, or, but, you know, basically good euphemism for it. It always staggers my mind that all of this crap just works right when it does.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. I yeah. No, that's a testament.
Nobody's building what I'm building. I'm building something unique. I'm building some damn unicorn of something. I'm not, you know, just pulling down a container, you know, 50% of the people are using. I'm usually doing something quite unique.
Yeah, it is an amazing technology, I will say that.
I've had that, like, I've done upgrades on the Linux system I used to deploy my vCenter, the vCSA, and it required some older libraries. So after I did, you know, an apt upgrade that you would normally do, and I was like, all right, now why is this failing? And, you know, you're going through line by line of the code where all the errors are, and trying to backtrack it, and then you figure out that it's missing some library that's no longer included. It's like, ah, okay, I got it. So I used to laugh at Door-to-Door Geek, because he was like, yeah, if crap's working, I don't update. You know, it's my personal stuff, and it's working in my home. I do not do an update. I'm like, whoa. And
well,
so, yeah.
There's sometimes you have to, like, I usually don't really go to my OMV box to update it, but then the MB app on my phone upgraded automatically because, you know, it's an Android phone and that's what it does, you know. And lo and behold, it wouldn't connect to my server, and I had to upgrade the server in order to get it to work. No big deal, you know, because it's using Docker on my Pi, and, you know, I was able to get done relatively quickly without having to rebuild anything. So, you know, that was a good thing. But was going to say, from the problems you're describing there, it kind of sounds like a good idea for flat packs. But it looks like the mainline Ubuntu's, like Ubuntu, Kubuntu, Lubuntu, so on and so forth, aren't going to have the flat pack tools installed by default now.
What a segue, Joel!
Right?
What a segue!
Right? So I get the article I read, from what I'm gathering, is if you've ever had Ubuntu Desktop loaded and looked at the little app store thing, the little bag thing on...
What's a desktop?
Oh, gee, I don't know.
It's that big blocky thing that you see next to somebody's monitor and pictures of the 90s when people were using AOL.
Right. But anywho, when you'll go into the Ubuntu App Store, if you search for an app, sometimes you'll see the same app twice. One's the flat pack, one's the Debian packages. So I think that's one big reason. Another is flat packs do take up more drive space. So,
as compared to
about that, as compared to if you just installed the libraries and an application, shared libraries.
And yeah, I agree with you. And I think the thing that needs to be said here is that first off, I didn't think Ubuntu in any installation, Ubuntu itself was installing any applications via Flatpak.
No, they aren't, actually.
They may have had the Flatpak tools, but they are using Snapd and installing software via Snapd, if I'm not mistaken, in Ubuntu. Aren't some things installed? I don't know. I mean, I guess the base system, no, but maybe there's some stuff that isn't, that they've just moved over to Snapd. I can't speak 100% on that, but...
Yeah, the Snap's still going to be installable. So
I'm not sure
for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what the big deal is about not having the Flatpak tools installed by default. Honestly, I'm out of touch with some of that. Like, I don't know how ubiquitous the use for Snapd and Flatpak is by the majority of the installation, user installation base that would be concerned whether it's a flat pack or whatever.
Right.
But I do agree it's kind of stupid if you have a software, quote, store or a graphical software installer utility that's listing two different versions of the application and it's just because one's a flat pack and one isn't. Does that mean if there's a flat pack and a snap and an install
and files,
that you have three different versions of the application?
That's something I'll have to check and look, because it's like one of those things, like, do I ever click on the little bag, which is the icon for their store, you know, which is essentially just a graphical front end on top of all of it. You know, 9 times out of 10, well, be really, once I built the desktop, it's done. I don't install a lot of extra stuff on it. I don't have time or want to play with server stuff after hours. You know, I do that shit all day. you know, so, but, you know, I don't know. Those all sound, you know, both Flatpak and Snap. I mean, if you have a good repo, like a good tool, like, for example, Yum or whatever it is now on Fedora, or, you know, apt on Ubuntu's or Debian, you know, or for Manjaro, you've got the Pac-Man repositories and other things as well. You know, it's like, if you've got a good package manager, one of the things that I think those things try to resolve is trying to make sure that you have the right libraries without having to go through like RPM hell. You know, and like I said, if you got a good package manager, you're not going to go through that. So, you know.
No, but, you know, the solution that SnapD and Flatpak is trying to solve is, you know, you're a developer of an application and you put out a new version, but then you have to wait for all the maintainers or whatever to upgrade, where you should be able to target a wider audience by using SnapD or a Flatpak, because it's just a matter of creating that. And in that environment, and then anybody who has Flatpak, regardless of what distribution they're on, should be able to use that Flatpak or that SnapD,
right?
So long as they have SnapD for their system or Flatpak.
Well, and it also becomes a security issue, because, you know, what if the app that Flatpak is relying on an old insecure library, you know.
But you could say the reverse of that too. What if your distribution is relying on, and the Flatpak one is updated or SnapD? I mean,
well, yeah, right.
That could be another reason.
But
I mean, I kind of look at that and say, you know, as a person who's struggling with storage limitations on some of my machines, you know, having to re-implement a bunch of the GNOME libraries in a couple of different ways, just, you know, on top of already having the GNOME libraries that they're implementing in there, anything like that, yeah.
Right. This is the mainline Ubuntu's, you know, like the, you know, Ubuntu Studio, so on, Ubuntu Mate, so on and so forth. It's not like Linux Mint can continue to do whatever the hell it wants, as it always does.
I mean, I like the idea of Flatpaks and SnapD a little better than PPAs.
Yeah. But I honestly don't...
Too bad, no Flatpaks for you.
Yeah,
that's right. But I honestly don't really, you know, I haven't had a problem with packages and libraries not matching up in years. So, I mean, you know, that just tells you how well the Ubuntu repos are usually done.
Don't usually get lost in dependency hell anymore.
No. It's been like a long time
since
that's happened to me. So,
of course, the only one we didn't mention, like, why? What about the app image? Did they still have that installed? Too. I mean, do they even have that installed? I don't think
you don't really know. Install app image.
No, you don't, do you? There's not a is there?
No, you just download an app image and then run it.
It's like a portable thing, right?
Yeah.
So
I mean, the reason people don't like app images is because, you know, there's no sharing of dependencies, so you're rewriting the same libraries over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't need the GNOME libraries. You know, I need some versions of GNOME libraries on my machine. You know, just for the hell, you know. But anyway, so.
Well, it's not like, you know, hard drive space is the premium that it used to be.
True. Well, unless you're Dan.
You know what you said there about app image. App image, according to some of this comparison chart I'm looking at, app image has the lowest, quote, application size compared to SnapD and Flatpak.
Interesting.
Most of the time. That's an interesting thing. Of course, that doesn't absolve the fact that
you're still loading multiple libraries
in that thing, that app image, to run it. So you're just, I mean, the benefit is you don't have to worry about library compatibility. The downside is you're including everything in the install.
Right.
Right. That would all work well too is, like, well, here's a good example is Chrome or Firefox, right? for your browser, Aaron. And if you have Chrome, if you want like either a Mac or a Windows machine, it literally will do a check for an update and says, hey, if you restart it, you have the new version. You know? That doesn't happen on Linux. 9 times out of 10, you got to go through your package manager if you have the Debs. So if it was in a Flatpak or a Snap package, that could happen much easier. But or App Image, probably preferably, because they can just download the new App Image and delete the old one. But you know, on other operating systems, it's much simpler. It just does it. You know,
I don't think App Images update. I think you just download the new one.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but it'll automatically download the new one for you if you do the App Image updater.
Right. So, I mean, or something like that, you know. And the browser, to me, is probably one of the most important things on all of our systems now.
It's probably the one you use the most on all your systems.
Yes. Well, and it's also one that's probably got the most attack vectors. So, because you can put your browser at any old thing. So, even my HP printer, well, if it's not asleep. like, I have this HP 4100, all right? And invariably, whenever I want to print, I'll send the print and just doesn't go over there. I'm like, oh shit, I gotta go over and hit the button. If it goes to sleep, all right, it's Wi-Fi connected, right? So it goes to sleep, and the only way you can wake it up is by physically touching it. You know, like touching a button, all right? Which means your print probably got lost or is not gonna go over. Invariably, I have to try printing it 3 or 4 freaking times before I can finally get ink on paper. And I go into the website for the printer and there's no way to disable it because, you know, it's saving what, 10 cents of electricity per hour maybe.
So I got a solution to that,
right?
So don't buy HP printers. An HP LaserJet 5 that I've in the last 30 years. And I've got a Tasmotized Wi-Fi plug that I turn the printer on and off with from my home automation system.
Yep. You know what? That's actually not a bad idea. I have a couple of for $18, I got these Wi-Fi. Basically, they're like a 4-banger thing you plug in your outlet, you know, and 3 of the ports are app or your smart home thingies.
And the fourth one is always on. Yeah.
Right. And I love them. I have and they come with a screw that will basically you can take this center screw out of the plate and then you screw the whole thing in so it doesn't come out of the wall when you go to unplug something from it. So, I might have to get a couple more of those because it was really good price on them things. Couldn't beat it. You got 2 for $20. It's like, oof. But that's something I might try on that. But in another $20 Amazon purchase, I had 3 cassette tapes that were recorded in 1980 something by my grandfather. One was a recording of me and my brother. I was playing my saxophone. It was the first time, like, the first year I played it in school. And then
of random squeaks.
No, actually, it was a song. You can actually hear it. I was actually pretty decent back then. But don't ask me to play now. But and then my brother played. Now, this is worse. My brother played his recorder on that recording. But... But then another tape had recordings of my grandfather. One of the things he did in his life was he drove through all 48 states, you know, in the continental U.S. Didn't go to Alaska or Hawaii, of course, but And he has had this recording on one of the tapes I still had that he made as he drove across from Oregon all the way to Westlake, Ohio, which is where we lived at the time. So that one was cool. And then there's one where he recorded a phone call with my aunt. And this was probably 89 to 90 because she was pregnant with my my cousin Zachary, who's now married and has a kid of his own. So these are really old, and I wanted to preserve them. So went on to Amazon, I grabbed one of the USB tape recorders. It essentially works as a USB sound device, and offloaded them and recorded them into MP3s. So that I don't have to worry about those tapes going bad. Because there's at least one tape that was starting to really get sketchy in some parts of the tape. It worked pretty well.
Freaking 40 plus years old. I'm surprised that they survived as well as they did.
What you need
to do is run it through an AI voice processor to make it clearer.
That might be something I try, because I do have the
get rid of that tape hiss.
Yeah. Or the tape noise, too. Because it's not like he had an external mic on it. It was using the little condenser mic built into the tape recorder. So you heard the motors of the tape going in the background. That doesn't bother me that much, but it is a good idea to remove some of that because it might clear up some of it. For $20, I could not beat it. It saved those memories. And some of them, it's just my grandpa just over days saying, "Well, Ida and I went to over here and we did this and we ate dinner at so and so's and it's, you know, tomorrow we're going to go eat dinner with Debbie, their daughter." And you know, really mundane shit, but it's like memories that I have now forever. So, because considering that the one where I was playing the saxophone, not only was he on it, but my grandma was and my mom was too. And they're all gone. So, you know. If you have old tapes, especially that kind of stuff, my grandpa was like we're naked if we don't have feel naked if we don't have our phone with us sometimes. He'd feel naked if he didn't have his tape recorder and his Polaroid SX-70. If I could find one of those and a supply of film. Yeah. I mean that, yeah, he was, you know, and there was another one on there where it's my grandma talking to, I think, an insurance agent. They're trying to basically get coverage so that if they had to be put in a nursing home, that it would be taken care of, you know, like how much of a week or something like that. So, but it's got the whole conversation, but right in the middle of it, and this is something my grandpa would commonly do. You heard the radio. He basically pressed record like in the middle of that other recording and re-recorded over it. And he was talking to one of his ham buddies, and the ham buddy was giving him an address for something that he wanted to remember what it was. So he just recorded it on the tape. It's just, and if you knew my grandpa, like I did. You know, you heard that and you just started cracking up because, you know, that's something done. But it was.
Well, it's not only something he would have done, it's something he obviously did.
Yes. So, but he did that a lot. He always had a cassette tape in there. And like I said, he would record, like, especially when he was on this trip from all around the United States. Always recorded something, you know. It's mostly him. So, like, my grandpa was probably one of the original podcasters when you really want to think about it. Just on tape. But the little USB thing, it was cheap. It was like 17, some change, 20 by the time you added tax and stuff on it, and it got here in a day. What a world do we live in, man.
So, Richmond, tell us about your new toy.
Yeah.
Well, so a couple of new toys. I now have, let's see, 5 3D printers. I got 2 Core XY. I've got 2 Ender 3s. And I have my OG ANET that hasn't worked in a while. I just haven't gone through it. So what I'm doing right now... Oh, and I have acquired, temporarily, a Ghost Gunner 3. So... I don't know if you guys are familiar. Actually, we had Cody Wilson on the show way back when, a number of years ago.
A long time ago, yeah.
And I went to SHOT Show. I saw one of Cody's guys at a party, but Cody wasn't there. SHOT Show uninvited Defense Distributed from showing up at SHOT Show. They were there last year. So if you guys aren't familiar with the Ghost Gunner, there's, you know, this is the third iteration of the Ghost Gunner. It dramatically decreases the amount of time it takes to cut an AR-15, so an 80% lower of an AR-15. And pretty much, you probably could do one in under an hour.
So this is CNC, not 3D printing.
Right. And I'll talk about 3D printing also. So it's basically, it's running an end mill. You know, it's a 3-axis, and it's, you know, like microwave-sized, basically. And you run an end mill, and that cuts out the fire control group, and then you unmount the 80% lower and, you know, rotate it 90 degrees. With the end mill, it'll mill out the selector, the fire selector, so it goes from safe to semi. And then you gotta change out the collet. It's a different diameter for the drill bit. I think it's 5/16 inch, if I recall. And then that drills the pinholes for the trigger and the hammer pin. And basically, at that point, even though there's no parts in it, it's legally considered a firearm. So, stupid cool, worked real good for me. I was using a Mac. My only problem was that the Mac kept sleeping. So I finally found the code. I think I asked ChatGPT to give me the code for the particular version of the OS, because I was running Catalina, so I could just throw it in the shell and run it and have the stupid screensaver and whatever stop from sleeping, because there's a couple of different settings.
So how much does that run?
I don't know if it's like $2,000, $3,000. It's not a cheap item. A number of people are selling them right now. So a friend of mine, DLD Hardware, in podcast world, if we can see the .com part after that, but he's selling them. Let me see if I can check for his price.
I'm curious, because I was thinking a hell of a lot more than $2,000 or $3,000.
Right.
No, and you can do other things with them. You can do, like, 1911s and stuff with them. One of the guys, Mr. Snow Makes, he's another Floridian, and he is working on being able to mill a Ruger 10/22 receiver. You can do 1911s, so there's... couple of different things you can do. Yeah, I'm just looking through.
Is it only useful for that, or can you use it for other things too?
Well, you got to program it, so it's G code. Yeah, I mean it's G code, and it's got its own specific flavor of G code. So you got to be able to write the code for it. You know, unfortunately, 3D printing, as much as it's a 3-axis CNC machine that takes G code, 3D printing is stupid easy compared to doing something with a Ghost Gunner, like writing custom G code for a Ghost Gunner. So on my buddy's site, it's $2,600 right now, and he's in Virginia.
Not bad.
And also, let's see, who else has them? GSD Supply, who's in Pennsylvania, which that'd be close to you, Pat. I know they also have them. I'm not sure what price they got. But the Ghost Gunner's a cool thing. And you know, they give them out to YouTubers, or they give them a discount to YouTubers. And Hank had one, and I was over at his house. I'm like, hey, what are you doing with that? I'm like, can I take it home? He's like, yeah, that'd be good. Because, you know, one of the things, like, Bodhi gives out a number of these things to people. And, you know, the idea is you make content with it and get them a little bit of PR. So I took Hank's, and, you know, I was going to do some content for Hank. But in the meantime, I had, you know, four AR-15 80% lowers, and I wanted to mill them out. So I did that. I do want to do a 1911 with it, so I got to get, you know, just some of the tooling for that. And like I said, at SHOT Show, I saw Garrett, so he works for them. He's like, yeah, I'll get it out to you. So that was cool. So it's kind of fun. Awesome. You know, it was, I'll tell you what one of the fun things was, is like I'm at a party and Garrett knew who I was. So I was like, oh my gosh, you know, people at Defense Distributed know who I am. That's stupid cool. So that was all fun. But right now, so I'm working on two betas, and one of my new favorite toys, and Joel, I did get a DJI Mavic 3 Pro, a Mini 3.
You got one better than I got. I got just the Mini 3, but
yep. Yeah. And I got the Flymore pack. Great. I can't believe how good that thing is. That's yeah. Stupid fun.
Yeah. The only real difference between the Pro and the Mini is the Mini does not have a lot of the automated functions. Follow you. Well, and it doesn't have forward collision either.
So just don't you gotta be careful. Things.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. The automated features are stupid cool. They're stupid cool. So going out my driveway, there's it looks like it's bamboo, but it's actually basically everything in Florida is a palm tree. If it looks like a fern, it's a palm tree. If it looks like bamboo, it's a palm tree. If it's a palm tree, it is a palm tree. So it looks like bamboo lines my driveway, kind of bends as it comes in, and the top of it kind of grows together. And I was just testing the follow me. And it actually dropped down in altitude as far as the collision avoidance and went lower and walked through it. And then I walked out to the street, turned around, it followed me back through. I can't believe how good that works. It's
yeah.
I
still have my Mavic Pro.
Yeah, I'm usually pretty frugal with this stuff. Right. And right. I'm glad I spent the money.
Yeah.
It, speaking of being frugal and spending money, so I got the Bamboo P1P, which is a Core XY printer.
Okay.
And basically, it's like after I've done all the customization to a printer, meaning added Octoprint with cameras, Spaghetti Detective, all this other crap. Basically, it's all of the goodness of that type of stuff built in. It's got a phone app, a desktop app. The thing.
Oh yeah,
like
the new Bamboo company that is putting out a printer. Okay, yeah, yeah. That always sounds cool.
So here's what I got to say to you. First off, now that I got the Bamboo, I barely use my Ender 3s, which were the workhorses. I did get also an Ender 7, which is a Core XY printer, but it's, you know, half the speed of the Bamboo and, you know, half the sweet functionality of it. So basically, you know, the Bamboo seems like they organized a whole bunch of open source projects and put it together for their slicer/printer control. One of the things I don't like about the Bamboo, if you use it, you know, wirelessly as opposed to like putting your files on an SD card, it uploads to the Bamboo cloud and then downloads to your printer. So I just wish they had a Docker container, because right. That would be much more sweet. I'm doing a number of these orgs, I'm waiting for the ATF to kick in my door for calling me a manufacturer. You know, it's like if you have a certain amount of marijuana, even though you're going to smoke it all yourself, you're considered like intent to distribute.
A dealer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I went a little crazy. So,
yep. That's cool. I might have to check that bamboo printer out because I think I'm jonesing to get another one. I still have my Mini 3, but I hardly use it.
So what I got to say about the bamboo, it's in respect to all of the other printers prior to it that I've owned, it's kind of like you're a genius with carburetors. You're a genius with points, condensers, rotors, distributor caps, and all that bit. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, none of those exist anymore. Where direct fuel injection and coil over plug ignition systems have a good day.
It's yeah,
like,
Bamboo what? Is completely, right. The company is completely new to the market. They basically did not clone somebody else. They built their own crap from the ground up. So
interesting.
So basically the Bamboo is most close, its most closest competitor is something like a Voron. And I was actually looking into a Voron, and the Voron would be like $1,000. It's about 40 hours worth of
parts. Or an Ultimaker, yeah.
And I don't even know what an Ultimaker is. I don't know that Ultimaker does a Core XY with all of the features that it has. So the resonance tuning, the pressure advance. So, and the higher end, actually both bamboos, you can get a filament. So you can do multi-filaments, so four different filaments, which is crazy cool. That's all automated, so you can do different colors. The guys are printing...
Well, I thought you could get like an extension and have like 16 of them on there or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's basically like a multiplexer. So you could put four times four on it,
right.
Which is kind of nutso. So good luck with that. I've been printing the what they call it the Nylog, so it's a carbon fiber nylon.
Right.
So when you buy a parts kit, a firearms parts kit, it's basically some military around the world sawed their receivers into a couple of different pieces. In the case of the AUG, you don't even get it. But what we're doing is we're printing the receiver in carbon fiber nylon. And we're using an AR-15 barrel. It has to have some custom work done on the barrel to make it work. And the barrel extension has to be shimmed so the AUG bolt, which is almost identical to an AR-15 bolt, but the bolt head is a little thicker. There's a little more depth to it. So you've got to take apart the barrel and shim out the barrel extension. But all of that aside, so now I'm printing in carbon fiber nylon. And I've printed PETG, PLA, PLA Plus. The PLAs are pretty forgiving as far as handling.
Yep.
But the carbon fiber nylon, for the first week I was printing, my prints were pretty good. I mean, surprisingly good. And I did a DIY hot box, and that seemed to work and all that with desiccant. And then I had a week where my prints were completely ass. I couldn't get anything right. And I was drying my filament. I was drying the filament in the air fryer. I was drying the filament in a dehydrator. I was drying the filament in a crock pot I bought for $5 at what is it? Where, one of those secondhand.
Goodwill, stores. Or yeah.
Goodwill. That's it. Goodwill. And I still was having horrific results. I then bought a $69 Sunlu 2 filament heater. It heats to 70°C. And then things started working decent again. And then...
And those are cheap, too.
Well, it's like $70.
Yeah,
It was definitely worth my time to buy one of those Sunlus as opposed to ad hocking everything else in all the time.
Right.
But...
Well, the dehydrator didn't work, or...
All right, so I'm getting to the answer here.
Okay.
So all of a sudden, I had another week of just complete crap prints. And it would print the first 4 millimeters really good. It would look really good. And then after that, it was complete ass. So I got a garbage pail full of parts. I mean, it should have been like a foot long
piece. I've had that
piece.
Week, but...
Yeah.
So it should have been a foot-long piece, and the first 4 millimeters were great, and the rest of it were just crap. You know, it only let it run a little bit. And once I saw it was going sideways, I'm like, eh. So I talked to somebody, was it Monday, in the 3D printing community. He's like, you have an enclosure? I'm like, no. He's like, get a contractor garbage bag, put it over your printer. Uh-huh. I'm kind of like, I think he's messing with me. Serious, that was the answer. So my filament, I'm guessing, was dry AF, but a little bit of draft. So I guess within the 4 millimeters, the plate being 80C was hot enough to keep it from having any problems with the draft. And after that, that was it. So, you know, you can run PLAs and PET Gs and have a ceiling fan and air conditioning and not have any issues. But this carbon fiber nylon was just having fits with that. So as dumb as it is, I've got my $700 printer with a garbage bag over it. But meanwhile, I'm on my...
Ordering a lac table?
Well, no, I don't think the lac table would work for this. I haven't done the measurements.
Yeah, I don't think, but by the looks of it, I just looked it up. I don't think it's big enough, or I think it's too big.
Two or three of them, and...
Well, yeah.
So, what I did do is, actually, on my Ender 7 right now, I'm printing basically the enclosure for it. So, the P1P is like stamped metal, and the carbon, which is the higher end version, it's like $1,000, has all of the nice features. It actually uses LiDAR to attune its extrusion rate. So it'll do a test, an extrusion test, before it actually prints. So
that's cool.
I ordered the polycarbonate, you know, the clear plastic for the sides, and I'm printing basically the corner portions of the enclosure for it. And of course, I realized that once I started printing, because I'm printing carbon fiber nylon on the P1P, and which I'm not doing on the Ender 7 for a dozen reasons, if I done the prints on the P1P for, you know, basically it's a incestuous relationship here. If I printed the parts for the P1P on the P1P, they would have been done in half the time. Because the P1P is just stupid fast.
Yep, there you go.
So the other thing, so the P1P is basically like Clipper and Octoprint already built into it.
Yeah, and I think that kind of stuff's starting to become a lot more common, because the one I'm looking at buying, it's not $700, but it is about $400. Micro Center has the Creality CR10 Smart 3D printer. So it's dual Z-axis, is 300 by 300 by 400, and it has a built-in Wi-Fi function and intelligent auto-leveling. So... because right now my CR10 has none of that. Whatever Creality's using, it might. I don't know.
So Creality has what do they call the touchpad?
Yes.
So
they have that too.
I think it's like. Is it $160?
Yeah, it's not expensive. Yeah, it's not that expensive. Yeah. No.
Yeah. So if you want a larger volume and all that, I would definitely the CR10 whatever smart and that
smart 3D
pad,
yeah
I would definitely do that.
And it's gonna work a lot better than my CR10 mini, which I can't complain about it, and I've learned tons of printing that and monkey farting around with it, you know.
It's the Creality Sonic Pad. It's $169.
Yeah, I've seen that. Essentially, it is a Clipper, I think, built into it. So, but technically, that would work with my CR10 Mini as well. But why? you know, I see, and that's the other thing too. Is the Wi-Fi features is nothing I'm
hold on.
Go ahead.
Why not?
Why not? Because 90% of the time, it's running when I'm working, so it's in the same room as me. So, you know,
no,
so
I
it doesn't bug me
that.
To.
Yeah, I'm still not seeing why not.
I can go walk over and check it every once in a while. Now, the only upside to that is I could do all that wirelessly, like if I set up OctoPrint or something like that. And that...
Dude, I've used OctoPrint on printers that were on the other side of my desk.
Right.
I have a printer that is approximately 6 feet away from me. That has OctoPrint running on it.
I don't. Yeah. And a camera. I feel like I'm unclean if I have to eject a micro SD card, put it in my computer, and then eject it and put it
micro
back
SD in the card. Since I set up OctoPrint, I have not touched the micro SD card.
I've not. I mean, I have set it across, but it doesn't bug me that much. I mean, in the same room, Wi-Fi
on my Ender Freeze. I even have Tasmatai smart plugs with a plug-in into OctoPrint. So I just click on my OctoPrint interface, turn the printer on from it, and also it has, you know, thermal protection, etc. Shut it down.
Which Ender 3s? The V2s?
No, I just got the generic Ender 3s.
Okay. Like the first ones.
the V1s.
Yeah, the right. V1s, the OG Ender 3s.
So that's one thought. And the other thought I've been having, because my birthday's coming up in April, I didn't know this until I looked at Micro Center's website, but Creality also makes their own laser engraver. And it's only $250 right now.
There's a lot to know about lasers, and yes. I know people in the industry, and you know, I just haven't gone there. So I would say, hey, do a lot of research, make sure it does what you want.
Right. Yep. Yeah, and I'm not sure if I want to get into yet another maker thing, other than 3D printing. It's 3D printing.
And
pretty,
I was
pretty awesome,
I was hoping
but, yeah.
maybe you could 3D print me a Pac-Man, and I shoot it with my Slayer Aug.
Yeah, I printed that super. I'm probably gonna end up giving that one. There's a guy at church. He does DJing, and he's gonna start running some 80s trivia nights. So I think I may end up giving it to him. But that's why cool. I even printed it in the first place. But I
so what?
See
what
using
filament
either
is
of these.
That?
What filament? That PLA plus. It was yellow PLA plus, inland PLA plus.
Mm-hmm.
That inland is starting to become the filament brand I go to now, especially since Solitex. Hard to find at all in any of their
so
stuff.
Wait, I would tell you the cool filaments to use, but I was sworn to secrecy on that.
And I'm
it's
also
like the guys in the 3D printing community, they're like, so what, and I'm talking about guys in like the 2A 3D print community. So what happens is when something, before something goes into beta, like if you're in the cool crowd or whatever, in the no crowd, you'll get an advance like, hey, you ought to pick up these Steyr Aug parts kits while they're $150 a piece. And so I picked up some quantity of them. And there are stuff like that. So where the 3D print communities are doing an alpha and a beta on a new firearm, and then all of a sudden the parts dry up because everybody wants to do one. Something like the Arc 1 and the Arc 2, I built an AR-9 Arc 1, so that just uses a barrel, a bolt carrier, a buffer and a buffer spring, and a trigger and a hammer, you know, fire control group from an AR-15.
Right.
Everything else is printed, and same thing with the Arc 2. So it's not like there's going to be a run on AR barrels or AR fire control groups. It's
right.
They're just ubiquitous. It's, you know, like in the 70s with Volkswagen Beetles, you're not going to run out.
Yep. Yep. But yeah, Solutec is who I used to get filament from, no matter PLA or PETG. That's really all I've ever printed with is
now,
either
you
of those.
Doing, like, PETG seems to be old school. Almost people laugh when you talk about PETG.
Joe prints with it all the time.
I print with PETG.
So,
yeah.
I'll tell you, I was printing, like I did a design of an AR-9 in PETG, but the PETG was almost brittle. Would like shatter. So
well, yeah, that's what PETG is. I mean, yeah.
So I think the PETG has its uses, definitely not for that. You know, so there are things it might be really good at if you need something with the strength qualities and you don't care about it being brittle. The carbon fiber nylon is crazy stable. So that's real neat. And PLA Plus, most of the firearms I've printed are in PLA Plus. So that's pretty neat. And actually, I did a lot right. of the ARC, and I printed a couple of ARCs, and I did a lot of that with just plain PLA.
Yeah, PLA Plus is really good.
Yeah, PLA is good for printing, nice and easy. And then PETG, yeah, it turns brittle real easy, and variance in temperature, and a lot of times I will get whole rolls that just don't want to print, and maybe right. it's because I need to use my enclosure, or I need to dry it out before I try and use it, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. And one thing I've noticed, at least, well, I'm probably going to try and do the dehydrator thing in my air fryer because it's got dehydrate mode.
So what on I would a say to you
roll
about
of transparent, actually, or by the Sunloop box.
If you're
got a roll
if
of transparent,
air fryer,
yeah,
really, really carefully. You know, if it has like PID tuning and carefully regulates the temperature, yeah, I would go for it. But you'd really have to be careful about that. What somebody suggested, I thought
right.
this was a good suggestion. Is a lot of this stuff is still running like 1980s technology. So
true.
If you get it up to temperature before you put the filament in there, because what will happen is these things will hit temperature, overshoot, and then come back down.
Right.
So you're probably better off if you're going to use an air fryer. One, make sure you're like 10 or 20 degrees lower. I wouldn't go above 70°C, whatever the Fahrenheit is of that. Because once you get like close to 80°C, the spool, the plastic that a spool is made out of, will like warp. It'll start going.
Yeah.
So it doesn't damage your filament.
Yeah.
So I would just be careful on that.
Yep.
But yeah, the Sunloop 2 is good. I did drill a couple of holes in it for ventilation because there are people doing projects where they're putting fans on it to pull air through it so you get humidity out. I just drilled a couple of holes, so I got some passive air coming out of it, and it still maintains the temperature, which is good.
The S2 is about 70, and I think the original is, the S1 is 50.
I like the S2 much does better. A higher temperature, and it has a heating element both on the top and the bottom.
Right.
So I think if you took the S2 and there's a project, let's see where this guy's website is. The guy's name on YouTube is Sasa Karonovic, Karanovic. And he did, on a Sunloop 1, he did a board with temperature and humidity sensors and, does PID tuning for the heating. And it looks really good. It's something I would be really interested in doing.
Interesting.
Because I have a lot of filament and a lot of printers, and I wouldn't mind having them in some kind of temperature-regulated enclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Like this big print box I have that I was planning on using for my printers, I'm only getting the temperature up to like 80-something degrees. And realistically, I need to be in the 150 degree Fahrenheit range or better.
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to precisely control that. You don't want to have anything go sideways on you. Along with that, you probably want to have a fan and, a way to swap out desiccant and a humidity sensor.
Yep. That's one other thing that I've been thinking about with regards to 3D printing is been I read this story and I haven't actually gone on to verify they're doing this yet, but the folks at Microsoft, which I take that with a huge grain of salt, they have a lot of their printer their filament without a spool. You have to buy one of those reusable spools. I have not ever... I mean, I have seen that before. I don't buy it because I think it's silly.
Are you talking about, like, PLA that's just kind of all sorts of scrap
vacuum
PLA
sealed in a pack, yeah, and then you basically open the spool, you know, like, twist it apart, plop it in that.
Look, I have enough failures on my own. I don't need help doing failures.
Thank you. That's exactly what my thought was. Because I thought, and ironically, you know, here's the thing. They're doing this to save the plastic of this fool, but yet you're printing shit with it. Okay.
See, I'll tell you what I think they should do. What they should do with all of the scrap PLA, the recycled PLA, is just print spools with it.
Yeah.
And put good PLA. You know, don't. I don't want to put that crap through my printer again.
Right. And I did see, like, I have seen, not recently, but people making basically, I guess there's at least one device out there where it grinds up all your failures and supposedly extrudes 1.75 millimeter PLA that you can run back through your printer. But
yeah, I'd love to know the tolerances.
It's not good. Yeah, the
good,
tolerances.
Good
would
luck.
Be shit.
Yeah, good luck on a DIY, because what basically the companies that produce the filament is that that's what they said. They're like, oh, you mean that $200,000 machine I have that guarantees,
right.
You know, 1.75 plus or minus 0.01 millimeters?
Right,
yeah,
right.
You're not getting that at home. That's
no,
not
you're
happening.
Not. No. Yeah. But
Again, if you're going to be doing printing crap that you don't care what it looks like, if it over-extrudes
right.
or under-extrudes in an area, and that's fine with you, good, go for it. That'll
right,
work.
Right?
And I'm not saying that facetiously or condescendingly. Like, if you're printing gun parts where it's like has to be
the tolerances
dead
have
nuts
to be right.
on,
right.
Yeah, then that's not going to work.
Right. In a lot of other cases too, you know. So, but yeah, I really got it. In fact, I haven't turned my printer off. I do have replacement fans for it, but I absolutely hate working within that CR10 Mini's box because it's everything so freaking tight in it. So I'm glad to see that Creality seems to be going away from everything being so crammed in that case. With some of their newer ones.
So I think the P1P on the market is kind of a shot across the bow of all of the other 3D printer manufacturers of like, hey man, you got to step up your game. And like I
they
said earlier,
earlier
in the conversation, I was really considering doing a Voron. And a Voron, it's like $1,000 worth of parts, it's 40 hours worth of printing, and then 40 hours worth of assembling. Like, it'd be much more economical for me to spend $700 to $1,000 on a printer than spend 80 hours of my time assembling a printer. Done. Now, a year ago when I didn't have a job, it was a different story.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like we have a 3D printing Slack channel in our company because there's a bunch of idiots like me that, it's actually really cool.
Anybody printing guns?
No. No. Most of them are printing D&D or Warhammer crap.
I mean, I've said this before to you in the past.
Dust collectors.
I'm not pro dust collector.
Right.
I think I printed Hogwarts
generally am
Castle
not
for
either.
My wife.
Yeah, like I printed a bunch of those frog boxes that Jove has been printing. I actually started putting stuff into them today.
My only quip on those boxes, I think they're great. I wish you could like put an O-ring in there
you can actually 3D print with TPU. On the ones that we were printing, there's two different designs, one that is made for the ring and one that is made for without the ring. And then it also has the STL to print the ring in TPU.
They're supposedly supposed to be waterproof. Yeah, they're supposedly supposed to be waterproof, but I doubt it.
Well, the filament isn't, but the seal will.
Exactly.
I always wanted to print one of those boxes, but being that I have, you know, 400 Amazon boxes here, I don't need to print any.
Right.
No, I just needed something for my bag to hold like USB cables and stuff that that was fairly.
That's why I use
sturdy
Altoids
and
containers.
Yeah, yeah. Altoids pins are useful too. They're a little bit smaller though, and
okay. Right. So, my favorite for those of you that don't have 3D printers, go to Walmart, buy a soap, a travel soap box.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
Like dollar. A few cents.
Yep.
50 cents. Yeah.
Yep. I've done it before.
So yeah, I got like USB dongles and cables. I'm looking at it right now here, and I'll tell you, it's opaque, so you can actually see what's in there.
Ziplocs.
I do the Ziploc also.
Yeah, I do it if that's the only thing I have when I'm packing, but I hate it. I don't like Ziplocs. Work great at keeping food in, but not so great at just keeping a bag of cables. Yeah, you know, I have I ordered when I got my Tom Benn bag, I did order a clear organizer cube and what they call a snake charmer, which works great for like the charger for my MacBook and stuff like that. But what were you gonna say, Joe?
I did use my 3D printed vise the other day. Well, just yesterday.
Cool.
Because I ended up getting one of the WaveShare GamePi 20s.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And I had to put the headers on that Pi 0W.
Oof. Okay, that's fun. That can be fun.
Print...
yeah. Go, Joe. Go,
I
Rich.
I want to print a fractal vise. That I think would be cool AF.
Those look cool, but it does look like it would be a rather complex print.
Mm-hmm.
Very print in place, and hopefully it works. Got to break it loose.
Yep.
So, Joe, I was thinking about you a couple of days ago. I wish you were a neighbor. I think, I don't know if it was Monday a week ago, I had a 50-inch TV go bad on me. The display still worked. It was a Vizio. I had it for 8 years. I'm sure it was like a capacitor or a resistor somewhere.
It's usually easier
I threw it on the curb.
Yeah, it's usually easier just to replace the whole power board or the whole... controller board, depending, but yeah.
Yeah, it looked like the display was coming up. It was just giving like a white dot in the bottom left corner. So I'm assuming, you know, probably a logic board took a crap.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the replacing that is not as bad as it used to be.
Yeah. Six screws, eight screws maybe, and then four more on the inside, and maybe two ribbon connectors.
Yeah. I probably should have been a little more diligent and seen if I could donate it to like a local maker space and let them have it.
Yeah.
Well, just put it on. If you're feeling especially lazy with that type of thing, you know, bring up your Facebook and put it on Facebook Marketplace. Somebody will come by and get it for you.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea.
And put at least some money on it, because don't put free on it, because I found people don't want it. It's like when we were moving out of the old house, you know, I had my old girl. I didn't have a place to keep it. Could not take it into storage. And so I put it on Facebook Marketplace for free. And they were like, does this still work? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, it's free. If you want it, come get it. If you don't want it, leave me the fuck alone.
Look, if I wasn't married, I'd be driving around the neighborhood with a trailer behind my Envoy throwing junk on my trailer, seeing if I can make it work. And I'm like, hey, I know how the garbage works. I could throw it on the curb when I'm done.
Right.
Yeah. It's like when I was in college.
Yeah.
And I used to go dumpster diving, you know, at the end of the semester.
That's the best thing about my neighborhood is if I have something large, like a piece of furniture or an old appliance or something, I just drag it to the curb and they take it.
Like today, we actually went to the community outreach, the Allen community outreach, and picked up one of those vacuum robots.
Roomba?
It's like a Roomba, but it's a Robovac or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And got that for excessively cheap.
Interesting.
And plugged it in and ordered the bags for it. And everything on it seems to work. The only thing left for me to check is how long the battery lasts.
Yep. And you usually get replacements. I do have a knockoff Roomba right now.
I got the robots, the mop robot downstairs, and I do use it. I've got two criticisms of it. One is the battery does not last as long, and this is out of the box that way, because I have so much flooring in my bottom floor. And the other is the tank for the cleaning fluid isn't large enough for it either. So there's no sense of me scheduling it because invariably it'll be empty. You know, if I run it overnight or something, it'll be when it goes to run the next job and it cancels anyway. So I just run it when I can be around in case.
Yeah, mine doesn't do the wet; it just does the dry.
Right, so. Right. Yeah.
Mine can do wet, but I think it's a lame version of wet. So I just do dry, and I have it go at 2 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah, I could do dry ones too, where it's not squirting any cleaner. It'll basically just be like a dust mop, you know, but I generally don't do that. I also have one of those Bissell crosswaves because my entire room in the house that has carpet is the one I'm sitting in and the stairs. That's it. Everything else is flooring.
Yeah, but I mean, I vacuum the tile with the Roomba clone.
They do have another like there's one kind of unique thing is if I stay in the iRobot, which is the Roomba ecosystem, I can get one of the vacuum bots, have it run, and then have the mop bot run immediately behind it. So it does, you know, it does both.
I say you just build a trailer.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, to really up the torque on the sweeper.
or if I want to build something tow behind my Traverse, it has to only weigh 1,500 pounds because I only got the two-wheel drive variant. When we bought that, I wanted to get a truck. I really did, but wife.
Right, guys, I'm going to take a cue from Alan, and I'm going to drop. So thanks for joining.
Yeah, and Alan wasn't even on here.
Good night, Rich.
I think you meant Pat.
Hear from me again.
Yeah, Alan hasn't been on in a couple months, I think, but
he jumps on every now and again.
Nice hearing from you there, Rich, and that's cool stuff, man. So
it is getting on to that time, though.
It's after 10.
It's bedtime time. Bedtime time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
This is the last show for February, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're not in a leap year.
Well, let me look at my calendar. Yep.
Yeah.
His next show will be on the 1st.
March 1st. Already, man.
I know. All right, everybody. I'm going to play out promos. Thank you. We'll see you in a week. Here you go.
I am short.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
My name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? With my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
You were making it for young in the kitchen.
was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
Yep.
Man, the assembled Prusa is over $1,000. Jeez.
Hey, what?
The Prusa i3 Mark 3S 3D printer, which is the latest one they have. You can buy it in two forms. You can buy it assembled, or you can buy it where you put it together on your own. That's when you buy the kit, you save about $250, I think, maybe $300, close to $300. But if you buy it where they assemble it for you, it's $1,000, $1,099. Yeah, I won't be buying a Prusa.
Oh, yeah.
That bamboo looks sweet, but I don't know if I want to spend that much money either.
Yeah. It looks like a great idea. I definitely, you know, wouldn't mind having one, but I'm not going to crap that kind of money right now either.
Yeah. $399 is about the limit. You know. Because then that gives me a lot of stuff that my CR10 Mini doesn't have. Oh. Like a bigger build surface, the dual axis Z axes, the Wi-Fi stuff, which, like I said, I don't necessarily think I would do that, you know, or use it much. It doesn't bother me to walk over and do that, because I have to usually prep the print bed anyway, so. Oh, I did find something, Joe, that might be useful for you. Do you use like hairspray or anything on your platform to keep it sticking?
Yeah, but I was using hairspray. It's okay. Nice to have my garage smell like the 80s,
right?
But, or the 90s. But the 80s and the 90s.
Okay.
But
so what I found was, if you seen those Mr. Clean magic erasers.
Mm-hmm.
They're essentially melamine sponges.
Mm.
That and water does an amazing job at cleaning my glass bed. And okay. Quick, too.
Okay, so, I have some of those magic erasers.
Yeah, and I also found on Amazon for like, I think it was $12 to $15, I can get 50 of them. Yeah, you know, it's made in China. You know, it's not Mr. Clean, but it's the same thing.
If you're changing how the release is going in, then you need an MI and an emergency release, because it can't go in on this release, and you need to declare the current release as a failure. So the paperwork now supports what we've been telling them all along. Of course, you know, the next app's not going to, the people that run the next application are just not going to listen to that until it happens to them.
Yeah, I'm looking at it up.
I got like 28 different apps.
Yeah.
So.
Learned a little bit about our new architecture, or our SaaS architecture. It has, it's quite interesting, because our team's going to start taking some SaaS tickets. I can't.
There's a show?
Yeah, it's not really something I can talk about on this show.
Well, don't talk about it now, because it's got...
Yeah, the recording started.
Right, but I haven't revealed anything yet. Yeah.
I got a little bit for the show. Not a lot.
Nice. I think I want to get a new printer for my birthday.
3D printer or printer?
3D printer. Actually, I could go either way on that, because I have a relatively new printer. It's an HP. I hate the thing. Because it will pull go
the tubing go off of the hot end, and it wouldn't come off.
Yeah. This one I can't talk about, but basically it goes to sleep.
Holy shit.
Maybe you should.
Yes.
Save it for the show.
I can.
What's the whole
thing? I feel a little bit like Richard Stallman, right?
Well, there's Flying Rich right there.
Oh, no.
Well, hello there.
What's up, Rich?
How's it going, guys?
Mr. Cam. Computer-aided manufacturing, man.
Well, I thought he turned into a cam girl. Cranked up his OnlyFans site.
Well, you know.
Well, that too, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, his gender's just a
$8
line,
a shows you his schlong.
Oh, you didn't have to pay that much.
Hey, I didn't say you were making money on your OnlyFans, but hey.
Alright. So, yeah, I'll talk about the,
getting paid a nickel to show your butthole?
Your subtractive manufacturing device.
And, well, also, right now I'm working... Well, there's two projects I'm in betas on. That's the, Nylog project. So we're doing the Steyr AUG receiver in carbon fiber nylon. And, the ARC 2.0, which is basically a gas-operated AR-15 that's fully 3D printed.
Making them ghost guns.
Oh, hell yeah. All about the ghost guns.
That's one of the reasons that I've always said that, you know, gun control is kind of pointless.
Yep.
And people always act like I'm insane. Well, okay, a certain segment of the population acts like I'm insane saying things like that.
Then there's the people that already know better.
All right, enough of your political jibber jabber. Let's start the show.
Politics here. 9:23. And hi, Dad. I missed you.
993. How you doing, Rich? All right, here we go. Let me count around, Joel.